From KUOW Seattle, the record spins. I'm Marcy Silman.
I'm Steve Scher. In Ezekiel Emanuel's new book, Reinventing American Healthcare, he takes a sweeping look at the American healthcare system, starting all the way back in 1790.
The first Congress passed a bill requiring ship owners to provide insurance to seamen. And what it shows you is that at least the first Congress, those guys who wrote the Constitution, thought that mandating insurance was not a violation of the Constitution.
There were those who thought and still think President Obama's Affordable Care Act is a violation of the Constitution. Ultimately, the Supreme Court has decided it isn't. Despite its famous flounders and despite many attempts in Congress to end it, the Affordable Care Act is the law of the land. What are the next steps to take control of costs and distribute benefits to more people? From January 2009 to January 2011, Ezekiel J. Emanuel was a special advisor on health care reform to the White House. I talked to Dr. Emanuel earlier about the costs of health care and the state of the health care system in the United States. He believes the Affordable Care Act will keep the cost of health care down.
We now spend nearly $3 trillion on health care in the United States. That makes the American health care system the fifth largest economy in the world. We spend more on healthcare in the United States than the French spend on everything in their economy. And we're catching up quite fast to Germany. For the past 50 years, healthcare has grown 2% per year faster than the overall economy. That's where we've gone from about 6% of the economy in the 1960s going to healthcare to 18% today. That's where your 18% number comes from. We spend one out of every $6 on healthcare, and it's growing. My contention is that by redoing the healthcare system, the Affordable Care Act is actually going to put downward price pressure on healthcare, both to reduce prices, but also, more importantly, to change how we use healthcare services to be more efficient and, by the way, higher quality and more effective. And I think that by the end of the decade, we will be far along in that transition, so we'll be able to bring the growth of healthcare to make it the same as the growth of the economy. That'll have dramatic impact on the whole economy. Wages will be able to go up faster because so much of the cost won't be going to insurance premiums. The federal budget deficit will look a lot better because of that. It's a major, major impact.
What's happened to the rate of healthcare spending in the last 2 years?
In the last few years, it's actually been historically low. The overall inflation has been low. I think what you're recalling, and 18% is still high, is the growth of insurance premiums. Despite the low rise in total health care spending, insurance premiums have been rising, and for many of us, that's still a bit of a mystery why that disconnect is happening.
I thought some people said it was happening because now that people have health insurance after a few years of being out of the market because of the economy, and now they are back in that market, they're using the services.
Well, there is no doubt that the slowdown in healthcare costs is partially caused by the Great Recession of 2008, but it's not, the slowdown is not entirely caused by that Great Recession. And it is true that more people are coming back in and using healthcare services, but there are many more factors that seem to be going into it. And let us just say we're in the midst of a big change on healthcare costs, and diagnosing exactly what's causing it in the midst of the change is often quite difficult. Suffice it to say, we have had some, there is quarter to quarter, year to year variability, but over the last 5 years, inflation has been, again, at relatively low levels in the total healthcare spending. And by the way, in Medicare and Medicaid, it's for the last 3 years, it's been zero growth in Medicare and negative growth. That is, we've actually been saving money in Medicaid.
What's going to happen with spending over the next, since you said 2020, until we get to 2020? What do you expect to happen with the ACA in place?
Well, I think we're going to continue to have low-cost growth, and I'll tell you why, but it's by no means guaranteed. The federal government has to take some action to reinforce the activities that we've had. First of all, the exchanges are putting downward price pressure on healthcare because most people who go into the exchanges buy the cheaper plans. And if you have 80% of the population buying the cheaper plans, hospitals and other healthcare providers have to be in the silver and bronze level plans, and they're going to have to figure out how to cut their costs to get into those plans. Second of all, there have been some important price cuts that have happened, and I think that has brought healthcare rates down. I am worried that if we don't have some more changes in Medicare, that will send a signal to the whole healthcare system that they need to transform how they deliver care, that costs could go up. I do think Medicare has the tools to send those signals and to tell doctors and hospitals, you're going to have to get off the fee-for-service, you're going to have to stop doing more to increase your revenue, and you're going to have to begin delivering higher quality care at a lower cost. And I think that is the single most important thing we need to accomplish over the next few years.
How about doctors? Where will doctors end up in terms of their income, in particular, with the ACA? You know, I was talking to some doctors about Medicaid in Washington State, that Washington State has a very good Medicaid program, and they did finally raise the rates for Medicaid repayments up to Medicare levels. And they still are, however, are facing the problem of, well, doctors are taking more Medicare and Medicaid patients, but we still have this discrepancy between that payment and payment from other sources.
Right. And that's a you know, big challenge, I think. But overall, doctors are nervous. I think, like many people, confronted with change, it's unclear how the dust is going to settle. That creates anxiety. And so I understand the anxiety among a lot of doctors. But I think if they work it well, doctors could come out very much on top in this situation. Remember, it's doctors who order tests for patients. It's doctors who decide which specialist they'll see. It's doctors who decide whether patients will be admitted to the hospital, which medications they get. And that gives doctors a lot of control. If we change the payment system so that patients get a bundle for being cared for, say, for cancer, then the doctors are much more in control for how to design the care that's best for the patient, not worrying about what's paid for, what's not paid for. And again, when you see places where they're integrated, the delivery of care is integrated with the insurance function, people are much more creative in providing new services and new arrangements for people that aren't, strictly speaking, covered by health care, whether it's air conditioning for the patient who has asthma during the summer. Well, maybe that's not a health care intervention, but if it allows them to breathe more easily and they don't get an exacerbation and admitted to the hospital, everyone's better off. We might design our care better to have more electronic communication, to have web urgent care visits. Instead of going into the doctor, you take a picture, say, of a rash, and the doctor can diagnose it most of the time without having actually to see you. Those kind of innovations in how we deliver care, those are coming, I think, in the next 5 to 10 years, and they will vastly streamline the delivery of care, both in improving the quality, making it much more convenient for you and me, and I think thereby saving costs.
Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel is author of Reinventing American Healthcare. The $250 million health insurance deduction that Americans with employer-based...
$250 billion, with a B. Nothing in healthcare is with an M, million. We're always in billions.
All right. So, yes, billion. $250 billion health insurance deduction,
right,
which you, I think, you supported getting rid of that deduction at one point?
No, getting rid of it's too strong. Again, look, I want to make important changes, but you can't change a $250 billion deduction, just get rid of it. You need to change the system more slowly over time. And it's the number one deduction in the American tax code. It's almost four times as big as the mortgage deduction. It's very regressive. So anyone who cares about poor people should see this as a problem, because rich people are in a higher tax bracket, usually have more expensive insurance. They get more benefit from this tax deduction than poor people. And it adds to healthcare inflation, because a dollar in health insurance is worth more than a dollar in wages. And so none of this is good public policy. And I think we should limit it and make sure that people who are getting fancy dance health care and people who are rich don't actually get that much benefit from this. And I think that's an important step forward.
Well, what would the healthcare...
the Cadillac tax.
Yeah. So what would the healthcare system look like if that wasn't in place? What would it look like in my pocket? What's the shift?
Well, it all depends upon – I mean, that's a very complicated question. It's very hard to answer depending upon what the change is that if you get your insurance through your employer or if you get your insurance in the exchanges. So one important change is it's likely to lead to a cap on how much insurance you get and more of your income coming not as the benefit of health care, but more of your income coming as cash wages. So you're likely to see your actual wages, your salary go up and rebalancing how much of your compensation is fringe benefit, i.e. health care, and how much of your compensation is wages. And I think that's something that is long overdue in the United States. In addition, I think actually one of the impacts of this is going to be more cost control, again, on the health care system. And that, in the long term, I think is also going to keep your premiums down and get you more cash wages.
Because I'll be paying for it, so I'll pay a little more attention to what I'm paying for.
But partially, but also I think because your employer is going to want the system to be more affordable and put pressure, again, on the insurers and the providers to deliver a product more efficiently. So one of the things I think we need to do is to actually restructure just the administrative management side of the Affordable Care Act, to have a CEO who's responsible for the federal exchange, since it looks like this, they will be permanent and running many state exchanges, with a small advisory board, and the ability to actually manage it without political influence one way or another.
So similar to Medicaid, Medicare?
No, similar to the way they've organized it in California and other places where you have a independent manager. And this is the way the Massachusetts, a sort of quasi-public-private entity that is really a independent body that governmental but independent so that they can actually run it without political influence. The second thing I would say is we need a timeline to change off the fee-for-service system. Right now, hospitals and doctors are largely paid fee-for-service. They're paid the more they do, the more they're paid. And my proposal has been that we shift that off of fee-for-service over a decade so that 75% of payments by the federal government are off fee-for-service. That'll allow, first of all, predictability, which everyone knows in business is important. And second, it'll allow hospitals and doctors to change how they deliver care, to focus on preventing people who have illness from getting sick. That's where the improvements in quality are. That's where the cost savings are. The third change I would do is that Medicare buys a lot of goods and services, lab tests, MRIs, hospital beds for patients, wheelchairs. We need to, instead of having the government set prices, we need to have more competitive bidding for those items. That, we have experienced, drives down prices about 40%. That is a lot of savings. We should expand competitive bidding in the Medicare program extensively. So those three things, I think, would make a dramatic change in the American healthcare system.
Where are the places you're looking at where you see coming together of insurance and delivery of systems? What countries are you looking at?
Well, places? Forget countries. Right in your backyard there in Seattle, Group Health of Puget Sound, well-regarded, always at the top in terms of quality, is a classic example. Kaiser Permanente in California. I was just up in Madison, Wisconsin. The Dean Clinic, about half their patients are part of their own health plan, and they have done a very good job of reducing costs and delivering care that people appear to be very satisfied with.
There was a recent Kaiser Family Foundation poll. It found that about half of uninsured people said they do not have enough information to understand how the law will affect their families. What do you think people need to know?
This has been one of the challenges, is communicating out to people and getting them to understand not only about insurance, but how to use the insurance once they have it effectively to make sure that they get coverage for what they need. First of all, they need to know that prevention is covered with no deductibles and no copays. That's true for everyone in the system. I think it's one of the big pluses of the healthcare reform, because we know that paying a little, even for prevention, that will in the long run be good for people, is a important psychological and actual financial barrier, and we wanted to get rid of it. And I think that's something they need to know. Second, I think they need to begin to understand what copays are, what deductibles are, so that they can actually make effective use of their insurance, and they don't use it just for trivial things. I think the third thing is they need to understand something about the exchanges, that they have options to choose from, and that, you know, they need to make a choice, and that they can get subsidies in the exchange to help them pay for both the cost of the insurance, but also for the deductibles and copays, if, especially if they're very low income. So I think those are the kinds of things people really need to know. We all, you know, even those of us who have insurance, need to understand that the Affordable Care Act is not just for them. This no copay and no deductibles for preventative services, that applies to us too. We have a lot of programs in the Affordable Care Act that improve the quality of care in hospitals, reducing hospital-acquired infections, reducing readmissions, those things that all of us are going to benefit from, not just the people who get insurance through the exchanges.
All right. What do you want to leave me with about how the Affordable Care Act will improve our terribly complex, blatantly unjust, outrageously expensive, grossly inefficient, and error-prone system?
Look, we're now 4 years after the passage of the Affordable Care Act. On every one of the three domains, we've seen progress. First, on access, we've seen about 12 to 15 million people get insurance. 9 to 12 of those million people were previously uninsured. That is an important improvement in access, and it came despite the disastrous rollout of the exchange. Second, on quality, we've seen some real improvements because of the Affordable Care Act in reducing the number of hospital infections, in reducing preterm elective C-sections, in reducing other falls and medication errors. We've seen a reduction in readmission to the hospital when a patient gets discharged, going back into the hospital within 30 days, an improvement in quality. Much more to do, but that's a big step forward. Third, we've had this slowdown in healthcare costs. Not all of it due to the Affordable Care Act, as we've talked about, some of it from the Great Recession, some of it from the redesign of healthcare plans, but certainly some of it from the Affordable Care Act. Do we have more to do on each one of those domains? Absolutely. This is not, as I like to say, this is not an Olympic race where you pass the finish line, you get the gold medal, and you're done. We will constantly have to be working on healthcare, trying to improve the system, trying to make it more accessible for people, trying to keep costs down. But is that progress in 4 years because of the Affordable Care Act? You better believe it. So it's already done some improving. There's more to go, but I think my subtitle is definitely right.
Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, he's written Reinventing American Healthcare, How the Affordable Care Act Will Improve Our Terribly Complex, Blatantly Unjust, Outrageously Expensive, Grossly Inefficient, Error-Prone System.
That pretty much says it all.
Yeah, that's all you need is the title, maybe.
It is The Record on KUOW.